This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. In the case of a large-scale emergency, what would you do? What should you do? From catastrophic weather events to cyber attacks to terrorism and a madman with a machine gun, disaster management is getting more complicated, more comprehensive, and more important. Statistically, we are living in a time of safety and calm, but there's plenty of bad stuff in the world happening all the time. When a disaster comes to San Antonio, what will happen? Who will take charge? What plans are in place and resources are available to save lives and minimize the damage? What goes into making an emergency plan? And how do agencies on various levels of government coordinate in the event of a disaster? How can hazards be avoided? What technologies are being implemented to protect the public? What do you think about a disaster? What would you do? Do you have a plan for your family? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. What do you think is the most likely disaster to happen here in San Antonio? I know it's a grim thought, but we have to think about this in order to prepare. With us today, Roger Pollock. He's the interim director of the Environmental Health and Safety Division and manager of public health and emergency preparedness for the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District. Also with us is Mark Chadwick, emergency management specialist for the Bexar County Office of Emergency Management. Welcome to The Source, both y'all. It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, we know what's happening in Las Vegas, and it's a terrible thing. And I can't help but wonder if there was a similar event here in San Antonio. It could happen anywhere. A madman with a grievance and a machine gun opening fire on innocent people in a crowd. How would we respond? Do we have a plan in place, Mr. Chadwick, to if something like that would happen here?
Yes, both levels of government, the city and the county, have plans in place. And we've spent a lot of time over the last several years working on exercises for active shooter and all of the training that goes along with that, stop the bleed, other things that would be incidental to that.
What does that mean, stop the bleed?
Stop the bleed is a specific training that has been provided. And it's, I guess, Roger, you'd know a lot more about it, but it's utilizing tourniquets and the ways of applying pressure. Yeah. And the different types of medical supplies that can be used immediately to try and save a life in a traumatic incident.
So it's focusing on getting the training out to people who might be a first responder in order to save lives, get people in that golden hour, stop the bleeding, and get them to the hospital. Is that what we're talking about?
That's correct.
But the problem is, like what happened in Las Vegas, they've got hundreds of wounded people. Over 50 people dead. Is there a municipality that has the capacity to deal with that level of shock to their emergency system from one day to the next? Roger Pollock?
Yeah, so kind of to start first with how the city and the county do emergency planning. The city and the county has what's called a basic plan. The basic plan is very general information of how city and county respond to emergencies without picking out any specific emergency. Underneath the basic plan, the city and county has what's called annexes. And so the annexes are umbrellaed by the basic plan. And then within each of the annexes, let me explain the annexes. So you have a law enforcement annex, you have a fire department or search and rescue annex, you have a healthcare annex, utilities, and on down. And that goes more into the specifics of how each city, county will respond to a given emergency. Then within each of the annexes, it breaks down and you have appendixes and tabs, and that's where you get into the specific plans of a certain response to a given incident. So, yes, the city and county do have that. My area of responsibility is health and medical, but I share the medical side with San Antonio Fire EMS, because they do emergency medical services, as well as with STRAC, or the Southwest Texas Regional Advisory Council, who coordinate with the hospital systems to move patients from an area where an incident occurred to area hospitals for treatment and, you know, resources to be available there.
So there is a, it sounds like there's a framework, an algorithm of response that you have. Talk about, you know, the appendix and the and these other
the
things.
Tabs.
And all these things. Yeah. It sounds like what that provides a way to communicate, saying we need this, we need this, and everyone is able to understand what it is that you're talking about and respond to it. So if there's a shooter like that in San Antonio and we get this, we hear the radio call, and the mass casualties, how do we respond? What's the first call we start making to the hospital, or who, or what happens?
Well, so the first call, it's going to go to 911, or what's called the PSAP center. It's near the emergency operations center. From there, they will call out whatever resources they feel from there to that first incident.
So would they just say, send everything? You know?
And something similar to that, you're going to get a lot of law enforcement. You're going to get fire, EMS responding to it. And again, the whole purpose is to, at that point, save lives and get people out of the affected area. And so those EMS units will get rushed to the area. We have a number of ambuses that could be mobilized, and you could get a number of people on an ambus.
That's an ambulance bus?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. And then you have a mobile command center y'all dispatched there as well?
There are mobile command centers or incidents command posts there. And then those incidents command posts, given what the scene looks like, has the ability to reach back to the emergency operations center for additional resources should they need any.
So it's going to be chaos, bedlam. And these our officials, your emergency management experts, you're going to have to try to make sense out of this immediately. Mark Chadwick, and y'all have training for this.
Yes, we do. We conduct a lot of training throughout the year. We conduct training on active shooter, cascading challenges, which is one of the things you'd be facing in this.
Well,
it becomes a domino.
Would that be like another person, a secondary shooter, or somebody lying in wait?
Well, whenever you have any kind of massive incident, there are the incidents within the incident. So there's all the other things that are happening. You're having crowd panic, which can crush injuries and those kinds of things. The panic that happens. There's a lot of things that are occurring. So it's not just one big incident. It's all the small things that are happening throughout it as well.
And the top priority is what? Save lives?
Life safety is always our number one priority.
Saving lives.
All yes, right. Sir.
We're going to talk more about that, San Antonio's plan, not just for active shooters. There's a bioterrorism. We're talking about nuclear war with North Korea. Who knows what's out there? And we've got these incredible weather events that are testing our city and other cities and our entire coast in Texas. What are we doing to prepare for this? How do we deal with the public? We got to figure out a way to minimize panic response, mass hysteria. You know, that's the thing that could really spin these things out of control. So that's all part of the situation as we respond. Give us a call. What do you think we ought to be thinking about when it comes to disaster preparedness? 210-614-8980. The source continues after this break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about mass panic, mass hysteria, natural disasters, man-made disasters coming to San Antonio. We're seeing it happening around the world, around the country. How well prepared are we for that here? Like politics, all disasters are local. The key ingredient to surviving whatever the world throws at you is not simply having a plan, but the planning process itself, so it can be flexible and respond. But one thing we got to think about these days is bioterrorism, an attack of that sort. That's a deliberate release of viruses, bacteria, or other germs to cause illness and death. These things can be found in nature, but they can be weaponized, and they can be spread throughout a community. And that's something that a lot of people are worrying about as technology develops to make this all the more deadly. anthrax, botulism, Ebola, other viruses, smallpox, that's out there. And that is one thing that they are working on here in Bexar County in San Antonio to respond to that. Roger Pollock is the interim director of the Environmental Health and Safety Division and manager of the Public Health Emergency Preparedness for the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District. And so, Roger, what is being done to prepare San Antonio for a bioterrorism attack?
So this is something we have been putting a lot of attention to really since 9-1-1. All levels of government, whether it's federal, state, county, city, recognize the potential of a bioterrorism attack. We have been charged just after 9-1-1 to produce what's referred to as the Strategic National Stockpile Plan for both the city of San Antonio and Bexar County. And so we've produced that plan. That plan was in place really since early 2006, up prior to going into war with Kuwait and Afghanistan, or Iraq, not Kuwait, but Iraq and Afghanistan. And the whole goal of that is to, should there be an incidence here, how do we treat 1.8 million people and prophylax them should there be a bioterrorism event? Coming up starting tomorrow and into Wednesday, we literally have a what we call an SNS exercise, or a Strategic National Stockpile exercise. That'll be located at the Expo Center, courtesy of Bexar County, letting us
use the space. Is that at the Joe Freeman Coliseum?
Right, yes. Behind the Joe Harry Freeman Coliseum, where we have been working with a number of our partners in refining the plan, but more directly been working with the UT Health Science Center School of Nursing, where they will be running the actual point of dispensing exercise. So it's a training event for them. We teach them how to run the operation there, how to dispense medications, things like that, to the general public, should something like that happen.
And Mark Chadwick at the Bexar County Office of Emergency Management, the people who are participating in tomorrow's drill, is that how much information do they have going into this? Are they go in, just be ready, and then the drill unfolds, and then they realize this is what we're dealing with, and so they, I mean, you can't prepare really for the unexpected, right?
Well, that's true. However, what we do is throughout the year, Roger and his staff will be working with people all along the time, trying to inform them. That's the number one thing, teaching people what do we expect when those bad things happen. Advising them what's in the plan, making sure everybody knows what is your role, what's your responsibility during this given disaster. So then when you go out and you conduct the exercise, it's not like we're trying to stump anybody with new information. However, there will be a scenario, there will be portions that nobody will know until they show up and they find out. But the scenario is not as important as being sure in what you need to do in your job and role. So as the exercise unfolds, you're allowing people the opportunity to work through that process in an exercise situation rather than a real-world situation. We'd rather make any possible mistakes during an exercise than during those real-world incidents. And then after the exercise, there'll be after-action reviews that'll be conducted, corrective action plans that'll be taken, so that we can develop the best plans and the lessons learned from that.
Our phone lines are open if you'd like to join our conversation as we talk about preparing for a large-scale emergency in San Antonio and Bexar County. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. What disaster do you think San Antonio, Bexar County should be the most ready to deal with? How are you prepared in your own home? People need to figure out their own plan, prepare in different ways. 210-614-8980. So the U.S. Center for Disease Control, they have this Cities Readiness Initiative. And is this the plan, that's the drill that's tomorrow, is that part of the CRI?
It is. So the city's readiness initiative are those areas that are densely populated across the nation where they receive extra dollars to go out and provide enhanced planning, enhanced exercises. And so we sit down with not only San Antonio, Bexar County, but all of the surrounding counties, so that are all part of the metropolitan statistical area, and coordinate our plans with them. Because what we're saying on media today, if there were a disaster, our media doesn't stop at the county line. We have to make sure that our plan is their plan, and where everything smoothly rolls out. Because if we're saying something here in San Antonio that, say, for instance, Atascosa County or Kendall or Bandera doesn't agree with, then it's going to cause just more chaos. So we make sure our plans link to their plans kind of horizontally, as well as our plans linking to our other partners vertically, whether it's the federal plan, the state plan, the local plan, and then our partner agencies that help us in responding to those plans.
So you mentioned working with the media, because how important is the media in these plans, Mark?
Invaluable. They're actually one of our strongest partners, because we want to get out the message. I think this is something that we were talking about earlier before the show, is that being informed and informing the population, you can't put a price tag on that. So we need to be involved with the media before, during, and after any incident and along the way. And we want to make sure that we're putting out a clear message that's understandable to the public, and that we're checking along the way to making sure that the public is actually getting the message that we're trying to send out. So if there's any corrections that need to be made.
Most of the partner agencies, whether it's city, county, or non-governmental partner agencies, they all have their own what we call public information officers. And they push information out every day that help people plan or just find information about a given incident. Here we deal with Zika and stuff that's ongoing. But you get into a large event such as Hurricane Harvey, as part of the Emergency Operations Center, there is a room where all PIOs go to, and they construct what's called one voice messaging that then gets pushed to our political figures, whether it's the county judge, the mayor, and they push that information out. And that's the information that people really need to know, you know. So,
okay, let me go to the caller here. The number is 210-614-8980 if you want to join our conversation. And Renee is on the line. Renee, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. With my limited experience in working in disaster areas and being a resident of San Antonio, but also looking at how resilient communities can be, it's so important. I see that if communities are able to act and do something immediately, it's going to happen through the community folks. Not only that, but as we've seen with Katrina and Puerto Rico, et cetera, federal funding, it's just not exactly where it needs to be anymore for this these type of events, and also just the sheer population and the climate impact in our environment. I think that communities are, to be resilient and strong, communities need to train and learn, so to speak, on their own, through church groups, through other community organizations. I think it's critical. I belong to a disaster group through my church, and I was amazed when we would go so many weeks or months after how much help was still needed, you know, and when a lot of the funding dried up and, you know, certain groups picked up their bags and left.
Renee, thank you for the call. I appreciate that. So, you know, we can't look to Washington, D.C. for all these answers. It's going to be a lot of it, the local government and also communities and groups, church groups. And do you all work with them, Mark Chadwick?
Yes, we do. San Antonio has a very active group, the San Antonio VOAD. That's a volunteer organization active in disaster. It's comprised of faith-based groups, non-faith-based groups, all sorts of volunteer organizations. They actually meet monthly at the Emergency Operations Center where I'm located. But we have to work closely with them because there's not any large disaster that any city or county can handle on its own.
What kind of activities would they be doing, Mark?
Well, some of the ones that are more prevalent, everybody knows, of course, the American Red Cross, they do sheltering. Salvation Army does feeding. You have groups like the Texas Baptist Men that have chainsaw groups, mud out groups, the same with United Methodist Men. There's even a Buddhist group called Zhu Qi that does disaster relief.
Like what do they do?
Oh, they provide blankets. They provide first aid kits. So you find that there are more volunteer groups out there than most people are even aware of. We've actually cataloged very many of them with the county so that we have those ready at our fingertips to call if the moment needs.
So, Roger, when the disaster happens and people want to respond, then that might be too late. They should probably, if they think they want to be a part of the solution, they need to get involved now? One of these groups here?
So the earlier you get involved, the better, of course. But when it comes to volunteers, there are always mechanisms that you can come and be part of the response in these large-scale incidences. You know, we just went through Hurricane Harvey, and the single best thing that the health department did, of course, we provided medical services for all the evacuees within the shelters. We monitored to make sure there was safe food handling and sanitation and things like that. But we have a group that's called the Medical Volunteer Coordinating Center. And it's through that center that we bring together all of these different resources. Some are partner agency, but there are mechanisms that people can call in and say, I want to volunteer. And in our medical response, believe it or not, and many thanks go to the Bexar County Medical Society, Angel Staffing, Stability Staffing, they provided more volunteers to respond in the incidents than we paid people to respond. I mean, like fourfold. It was that huge. We didn't pay for a single hour of physician time because Bexar County Medical Society coordinated all of the physicians to provide medical services in those shelters.
And I can just imagine San Antonio's with its rich retired military community. There's a lot of resources, a lot of expertise that can be drawn upon and to fill some of these roles.
And actually heading the charge with the Medical Society, Dr. Cohen, who is general of Texas Military Forces, coordinated much of what the Medical Society was doing. So many thanks to Dr. Cohen.
All right, we're going to come back, take a break, and talk more about preparing for a large-scale emergency in San Antonio and Bexar County. Planning today, just talking about it today, will pay dividends in the future, not if a disaster comes to San Antonio. One will be coming here. We have to make sure that we are ready to deal with it and treat it seriously today, even though it may seem like kind of fear-mongering. It's not. This stuff is real. Give us a call. Your reaction. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. We'll be back after this two-minute break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Hurricanes, they recently hit Texas, Florida, Puerto Rico. Earthquake shook Mexico badly. Wildfires hit the West Coast last night. There was a madman with a machine gun raining bullets down into an innocent crowd in Las Vegas. Let's face it, there are no guarantees that the universe won't take a turn for the worst on one day here in San Antonio. Let's prepare for that just by talking about it, thinking about it. There are drills. There's an exercise plan for tomorrow. So what worst-case scenario do you worry about? What's your survival plan? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. And we're joined now by Dr. Craig Manifold. He is the EMS medical director. And Dr. Manifold, welcome to The Source.
Well, thank you, David. I just wanted to comment and say thank you to Mark and Roger for their leadership in the community as responders and responsible for the planning and coordination of these processes for us. And we're very fortunate in San Antonio and the Bexar County and surrounding areas in that we are well-prepared, well-coordinated, and have communication tools in place to have a well-coordinated response to these type of disasters such as we saw last night. So we're very fortunate in our community, and that goes to the professionals of first responders who exercise and use these processes routinely. But the complexity goes not only to the first responders, but to the hospitals who are able to have that coordination and communication. But the resiliency of our community is probably the most important thing, where our individuals can learn some simple and effective techniques to save lives, which will have the largest impact for these kind of disasters that respond. You know, we're concentrating a lot on acute trauma issues, and you heard a little bit about the Stop the Bleed program, which I appreciate you promoting. In Comal County last year, some of the first responder agencies taught and trained school-aged students throughout all of Comal County and placed disaster response kits, Stop the Bleeding tourniquets, and bleeding control techniques into their facilities, along with the educators and resource personnel from the high schools and middle schools throughout Comal County. And we're currently in the process of recreating that in Bexar County as well with some of the San Antonio school districts. So those type of programs are probably what have the most effect for the communities and being able to provide some life-saving therapies. And so we certainly appreciate you highlighting those type of programs for us.
All right, Dr. Manifold, thank you for your call. We appreciate that. When the first responders, when there's a disaster, they rush into there. We don't even know what they're rushing into at times. We saw that in Houston when Harvey flooding hit. There was that chemical factory where it was caught fire. And we still don't even know what the first responders were exposed to. We know that when they went into the smoke, they were blinded, they got nauseated, some passed out, they were throwing up. Why don't we know more about what some of these things are? Isn't there some sort of, do we need tougher laws in order to figure that out? Is there anything like that here in San Antonio that we have to deal with, Mark or Roger? I mean, is that a problem here?
Well, the truth of the matter is there's hazardous materials all around us and different levels of concentration. Some of your most dangerous locations, though, are in your homes, where you find people who make just simple mistakes. You know, they think in cleaning, they pour ammonia down the drain, and the next thing they do is pour bleach on top of it. They don't realize they can actually asphyxiate themselves overnight.
As a chlorine gas is released.
Right. And that's happened. But yes, there are large concentrations of chemicals in every major metropolitan city. They have to abide by the laws that are in place. But what happens in these major disasters, like we're talking about with Hurricane Harvey, is Mother Nature has a tendency of not playing by our rules. So where things that were stored in a safe way, they were stored in the legal way. When you have high winds that impact that facility or those containers, fires, different things that cause those chemicals now that were safely contained to not be contained anymore, those are your problems. And then how do they interact? You know, some of these things are water reactive, they're air reactive. And then when you put human beings in the line of that, in the responders, some of the bravest people you've ever met in your life trying to go in and just take care of a situation, then they can be exposed to any number of things. Simply what's in the water after a flood.
Absolutely.
So, and of course, I mean, there are requirements that individuals, companies, facilities use placards. You have all these different chemicals that are out there. These chemicals are represented or should be posted wherever these chemicals are found that identify this chemical as XYZ,
whatever. Combustible.
It is. Exactly. And so when our first responders show up at the scene, that those are the first things that they look for. If it's an 18-wheeler here on 1604 or 410 that overturned, those 18-wheelers got placards on the side of them, and so that's the first thing they're looking for, those placards. Each one of those placards have a number on it, and of course then they reference it to a chemical reference guide that gives them instructions of how they need to treat that particular incident.
And those trucks are going down the highway with everybody else.
They sure are.
Let's get Shay on the line. She's called in. Hey, Shay, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. My issue is San Antonio did recently kind of get tested with a mini disaster in the form of the you know, fake gas shortages. And I thought we did pretty bad at that. What happens when actual lives are at stake?
All right, Shay, thank you for the call. So that was an example of a mass hysteria, people reacting in, is that to be unexpected, that people would rush to the gas station if they thought we're going to be out, but there was no shortage? I mean, is there a lot of thinking and research that goes into understanding mass panic? Roger Pollock?
Well, there is. So all of our, again, going back to our public information officers, they all communicate across all the departments across the city as well as the county. And they all, although report to the director within the department, they all report to the director of communications. And so they are constantly tweaking the plan, per se. I know here just this last week they had a crisis emergency risks exercise. And so, you know, every exercise, depending on what the injects are, turn out differently. But the thing that makes it real difficult is social media. In social media, somebody could put something out there and it hit thousands of people all at one time, and then you have a mad rush, kind of like you said, for the gasoline pumps. And whether it was an issue or it wasn't, it got passed on from 1,000 people to 100,000 people. And so the city's always in the process of trying to verify. And so when they do, then they try to counteract those social media postings that don't have any warrant to for people to get excited about. So
the collective response to a threat or disaster is often portrayed as tending towards hysteria and social breakdown, but we do see that that's not necessarily the rule. I think with proper leadership and inspiration, right, that people will rally and to support each other, and we saw that last night. You know, there were some people, of course, they ran for cover, and I don't blame them, but there were other people that stayed and took care of the wounded at the risk of their own life. So there are heroes all around us, and we have to at least acknowledge that not everyone is going to panic and do the heroic thing. So Mark Chadwick, how do we maximize the positive response?
Well, I think one is that we need to actually illustrate those areas where people have done the great things, the good things during disaster. One of the things I was thinking about while Roger was talking about is there's such a condition we talk about is called normalcy bias. People live around hazards all day long, and it becomes normal to them.
Sure. I lived in Mexico City, and we just, you know, this dealt with it.
Right, exactly. And then so when something bad happens, when they live in that context, you will have different reactions from different people. Normally you find the people who've had a little bit of information in advance about what they're around, what kinds of potential hazards are, will react better than those who haven't received any of that information, which is one of the reasons why, you know, nationally there's a a big push on what we call be informed, make a plan, have a kit.
And have a kit, what does that mean?
Well, you know, and that's a good question, because a lot of people think that's something I've got to go out and buy. And what we did in Bexar County here 2 years ago is we actually commissioned and had one of the universities do a study for us to find out if people were actually prepared. And the average ended up being very well. One is, do you have a flashlight at home? Because we don't want people using candles during disasters. Do you have Band-Aids? Do you have a family communication plan? For example, if I can't get hold of my wife during a disaster, I know I'm supposed to look for her at her parents' house. But it's all about having a personal plan for you and your family.
Should people have a radio, a battery-powered radio?
Either that or even one of the hand-cranked ones. Those still work.
All right. Okay, we'll talk more about that when we come back. We'll take some calls. The number is 210-614-8980. Will, if you hang on, we'll get you right after this break. He wants to talk about looters. 210-614-8980. The source continues talking about disasters and emergencies in Bexar County. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. What should San Antonio residents know and do to prepare for an emergency in their homes, businesses, and community? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. What disaster do you worry about? Will is on the line. Will, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. We talk a lot about preparedness, but you know, you can store all the water and food at your home to weather out such an event. But if you have people that want to take it from you and you have no way to defend yourself, then they're going to come take it. I mean, we've seen it in Harvey. We've seen it in Puerto Rico. We've seen it in the British Virgin Islands and the Virgin Islands. When these disasters happen, the looters come out.
All right, Will, thank you for that call. I really appreciate that. So that's the other concern, as the breakdown in law and order and the concern about looters. And so what do we really know about looting? Is that something that, because it seems like that's overstated, that there is a massive problem of looters. Mark or Roger?
The negative always grabs people's attention first. And so whether looting is large scale or small scale, the perception is that it's large scale. And then the underseen things, the small heroisms that happen during those things, somebody who saves somebody's dog or cat or helps somebody.
Or they share what they have.
Exactly. Those are the things that you don't see because they don't capture the attention of the public like that.
But do you really have marauding bands of people stealing other people's water and supplies?
As far as for going house to house, you normally don't see anything like that. More often than not, it's going to businesses, and you'll see that some of those.
Yeah, they're
going to
go steal those plasma TV.
Right, right. Even if it's walking it through flooded waters, yes, we've seen that.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I mean, what Will's call is important, because that's a public perception, and these things have a way of becoming a problem. You know, if they're more concerned about looters than they are about saving lives, so we have to get a reality check. What should we know about looters, Roger?
Well, so I think it all comes down to resources as well, and so. I mean, you can't have a police officer posted outside of every commercial business out here in San Antonio and Bexar County. And so it's not real practical to think that it's not going to happen. It will happen. But, you know, it's like Mark had said, there's a lot of positive things that go on during these events and people sharing. And unfortunately, what the media often catches are the ones where you see multiple people just raiding a Walmart or something, and they're pulling out.
But frequently, these people are taking. I've seen these videos, mm-hmm. and they were taking food because they were hungry. They hadn't had food, so in
locally, of course. What we do in affected jurisdictions or areas within Bexar County, San Antonio, is, say, for instance, we get a flooding event, we start opening up shelters within those areas. And so, I mean, technically nobody needs to go without that meal. Now, it may be a struggle getting to that shelter initially, but of course, working with our San Antonio Police Department, Sheriff's Department, Fire Rescue, they extract people out of the affected area and then give them direction of where the Red Cross shelter is. And of course, once you enter into the Red Cross shelter, you're open to a whole number of other services that are provided to you. And
so what happens to people who are dependent on things like dialysis? I mean, how do we make sure that these people get the treatment that they need?
So those are those agencies that I referred to earlier as being part of the Medical Volunteer Coordinating Center. So we plan very closely with many of the larger dialysis centers here within San Antonio, whether it's DaVita or Fresenius. They helped us during Hurricane Harvey. They went in and assessed our guests that came from whether it was Rockport or wherever.
Or Corpus.
Corpus. Identified those individuals that needed those services and then opened their doors to them. Yeah.
So we have a backup plan for those folks.
We do.
Awesome. Let's go to another caller. This is Dr. Lillian Lau. And Dr. Lau, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
All right. Thank you for calling in. And so you wanted to talk about Stop the Bleed.
So, yeah, actually, you know, because of mass casualty events such as what had just happened in Las Vegas, the American College of Surgeons and the U.S. Department of Homeland Security developed a national awareness campaign called the Stop the Bleed program. This is really an initiative at the grassroots level to encourage bystanders to become trained, equipped, and empowered to help in a bleeding emergency before professionals can arrive. It is a technique where we teach bystanders to put on tourniquets, compress a wound to stop the bleeding, because really in mass casualty type situations, it takes time for first responders to get to the scene because the scene is not cleared and oftentimes EMS can't get to an injured person. And so this particular campaign teaches bystanders how to save a life. And so, I think that it's a really important technique to promote throughout San Antonio, South Texas, and, of course, the rest of the country.
So is this something that, like businesses with a lot of employees would have, like, we're going to have a training day today, and we're going to teach Stop the Bleed. Is that something that's available?
Absolutely. And University Hospital, in partnership with UT Health San Antonio and our group in the trauma division, goes out across the city and South Texas to teach this particular technique of stopping bleeding as a bystander. For example, we taught the Northeast ISD nurses, and there were over 120 nurses who came and learned how to use bystander techniques to stop bleeding in an emergency situation 6 months ago. Just last week, there was a conference in town of data analysts, and they wanted to learn Stop the Bleed. So we mobilized a team to go out to their conference and taught them how to do bleeding control in a matter of hour to hour and a half.
Well, I'm sure that's a good – if someone can't go to one of these seminars, I mean, are there videos on YouTube that I could watch?
There are videos on YouTube, but we do recommend the class. University Hospital holds a monthly course to teach civilians how to do bleeding control. This particular course is held on the first Monday of every month at the hospital. And anyone who owns a business who has any, you know, from five employees to hundreds of employees can contact our group, and we will come out to your facility and put on a course. Our goal is to teach everyone in San Antonio this simple technique that maybe it's not a mass casualty situation, but you're out running a trail and somehow you're injured and you're bleeding.
Or you come across a car accident.
or when you're in a car crash and, you know, your leg is bleeding and you need to try to stop the bleeding before emergency medical responders can get to you. Our goal is that anybody who's bleeding can die from bleeding in less than 5 minutes. And so you want to stop that blood loss quickly. And the bystander is the first person on scene for the most part.
All right, Dr. Alau, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate that. Another thing people do need to be concerned about, shock, people going into shock and treating people for that. Mark Chadwick?
Certainly. So shock can happen from various kinds of things. So after a shooting incident, it's not just those people who were shot, but can be those people who just witnessed it. So that's an individual thing. I'd feel more comfortable letting Roger speak
okay,
about
Roger.
That.
Yeah, I mean, it all comes down to providing the services of, I mean.
But I think, I'll give them a blanket or elevate the feet, or what do you do if someone's going into shock?
It is. It's giving them a blanket, warming them up, showing compassion, letting them know that they're safe. It's extracting them, getting them to a safe area if they're not already there. And then it's providing mental health services to help diffuse the situation. And that's done very effectively through, they call it first aid,
Well, there's a couple of different ones. I know that there are faith-based groups use a spiritual first mental health, and then there's the mental health first aid.
So San Antonio's most likely disaster would be a flood. You know, and that's one we're most concerned with, and so that's one we're probably best prepared for.
We are Flash Flood Alley. Whether we like it or not, that's what we're designated by the National Weather Service.
And so that would mean what? What's the number one thing we're getting ready that we have on in queue for that?
Well, the biggest difference between flooding and flash flooding is flash flooding, you can have dry ground 1 minute, and literally within minutes you can have feet of water, because we have all the hard surface outside, the concrete surface, the
right. So the rush of water, not the standing water,
right.
That's going to be around for a long time.
Sure.
And so we're prepared to deal with that. That's the most likely disaster calamity to hit this area. I want to thank both of our guests, Roger Pollock. He is the interim director of the Environmental Health and Safety Division and manager of the Public Health Emergency Preparedness for San Antonio Metropolitan Health District. Also with us today is Mark Chadwick, Emergency Management Specialist for the Bexar County Office of Emergency Management. A Stop the Bleed is a program that's offering, trying to teach everyone in San Antonio how to stop someone from bleeding out during an emergency situation. You should check that out. And thanks for listening to us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.